Nearly every ancient culture has legends of ancient visitors who came from the stars. These visitors brought knowledge, advances in technology, and sometimes chaos to the primitive inhabitants of Earth. In a moment, our very special guest tonight, Brent Rains, his work, Visitors from Hidden Realms. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Brent Rains. He's been investigating, researching UFOs since 1967. He is the author of Visitors from Hidden Realms and the editor of Alternative Perceptions magazine, Alternate Perceptions magazine. Brent has traveled extensively across the U.S. into Canada, interviewing just numerous witnesses and researchers. He has taken a comprehensive global and historical perspective on ufology and the landscape of it. He has also participated in Native American rituals and ceremonies, gaining valuable insights, information from his interactions with these wisdom keepers. Brent is able to make revealing comparisons between the interrelated experiences and disciplines of parapsychology, shamanism, Jungian archetypes, and ufology. He's our guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Hey, Brent, how are you?
Hey, George, I'm just fine. How are you?
Good, good. Did you interview Betty Hill once? Because if you did, I envy you.
I had traveled with her, investigating cases up in New England. I'm originally from Maine, and we traveled around Maine and New Hampshire and Massachusetts, interviewing other people who had experiences. Of course, this gave me an opportunity to know her as well, and I did spend hours with her at her home in Portsmouth and at her mom's home and visited various places that she said there was activity. And she even came up to Maine and stayed with me and my parents some. So I had quite an interesting series of experiences.
You came away from all of it. What did you think?
There was definitely something, you know, that had happened there, and it was. Of course, I also became aware of the paranormal element, and we could see it in many other cases too. You know, that we investigated. Of course, Betty was still very nuts and bolts. A lot of times she was kind of in denial about a lot of these experiences that even she has, you know. But there was certainly I know that my friend Dr. Berthold Schwartz, who is also a parapsychologist, and he's an eminent psychiatrist. He's retired now, lives down in Vero Beach, Florida. But he wrote the two-volume classic UFO Dynamics, and he's definitely, you know, he was also in touch with Betty Hill and has written some articles for the prestigious Flying Saucer Review over in England, and included a lot of the material in his book, UFO Dynamics.
Okay. Hey, Tom, I'm going to ask you, Brent, to speak up because producer Tom is going to have to call you back at the half, and we're going to reset this line with you, okay?
Okay, sure.
So speak up as loudly as you can up until we get down to the bottom of this hour, and because it sounds like your phone's in a tin can.
Uh-oh.
You're not in a UFO, Brent, are you?
No, I assure you. I'm right here in Waynesboro, Tennessee.
Okay. Yeah. Your involvement in the field of ufology, are you on a portable phone?
No, this is a regular house phone here.
House phone with a landline, huh?
Right, landline.
Okay, all right. Yeah, since scratchy as all heck. Okay, when you became involved in the field of ufology, what was it that steered you in that direction?
Well, initially, and this goes way back to, it was March 1966, I was age 13. And at that time, there was the national UFO wave that was going on, a big flap, as we call it now, the Air Force called it. And there was Dr. Hynek with his swamp gas explanation for some of the activity out in Michigan. And up in Maine, where I was originally from, there was a lot of activity. I kept looking at the skies, hoping I would see something, you know. And I'd always been interested in astronomy and such, even at that young age. So I thought maybe there's you know, life out there, and maybe that's what this is. You know, I was optimistic. And then in early 67, age 14, I had read Flying Saucers, Serious Business by Frank Edwards.
Frank Edwards. I read that same book, Brent, and it hooked me as well. And of course, as you know, all those things were happening. The Look magazine was coming out with, Betty and Barney Hill. All that was coming in at our young minds at that same time period.
That's right. And there were the pilots and police officers and astronomer that he described in his book, seeing these things. I knew there had to be something to it. And I'd seen him also on the Merv Griffin Show and our Linkletter. And so, I was pretty impressed with the man. And I soon joined the APRO organization, Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, that was founded by Jim and Cora Lorenzen. I'm sure you remember them, too.
Oh, sure.
And so initially I thought it was, pretty strictly a nuts and bolts. It was either-or type thing. It was either extraterrestrial visitations or else we were dealing with just some hoaxes and, temperature inversions on the horizon, seeing Venus to a temperature inversion or weather balloons and all that. But that was rather hard to believe that all these credible, qualified, observers would be mistaking all those conventional things, natural things, for structured craft with the windows and even the beams, So I became pretty convinced early on, even at a young age, and decided to get involved, and I started collecting whatever information I could, going to the library, bookstores, collecting books, magazines, and one of my first correspondents was Lucius Farish out in Plumerville, Arkansas, who had always had lots of newspaper clippings, and so I'd correspond, exchange clippings with him, and of course today he's still active, involved with the Ozark Conference every April, and brings speakers from all over. So that was my early involvement and awareness of the UFO situation.
Now, you started studying specific cases, Brent. Was there any one case that really, got your interest going?
Well, what really, caused me to come around was to take a broader approach was reading the works of certain pioneers back in the late 60s, like New York journalist John Keel, French-born astrophysicist Dr. Jacques Vallée, and, of course, the legendary Brad Steiger, when they began to, consider alternative theories, pointing perhaps to parallel realities, alternate realities, how there were cases involving poltergeist manifestations, apparitional-type phenomena, out-of-the-body experiences and so on, there were, a lot of these experiences that UFO witnesses were undergoing. And so in 1972, I started, going around and visiting people that, following up stories of haunted houses and things. I thought, well, if there's a psychic component, I want to familiarize myself as much as I can with these kind of experiences. And so that was when, the particular book that really got my attention was Operation Trojan Horse by Keel and Passport to Magonia by Vallée. And Steiger's Aquarian Revelations. And
these were all home run authors, as you well know.
I mean,
these people are the tops in the field, have been. Jacques Vallée has pushed himself out of the ufology field. He really doesn't want to get involved in it anymore. I think he's been on one or two conferences in the last couple of years. We've been wanting to get him back on the program, and he just really doesn't want to associate himself with UFOs anymore. Something happened to him. The other guys that you mentioned, the other individuals, they've been regular guests here on this program. And Steiger, Uri Geller, dear friend of ours, and John Keel, by the way, just had a heart attack.
Yes, I read about that.
So I hope he fights his way back. But we need a lot of people to investigate these cases. And in your particular case, you have investigated, so I'm going to call you somewhat of an authority on these ancient visitors. What did you come across, Brent, that just really seems startling? Because to me, ancient visitation could very well be the key to our entire civilization.
Well, I felt that you do have to take a comprehensive global and historical perspective on all of this. And but a lot of the traditions of, you know, ancient cultures, the shamanic societies around the world had all kinds of stories, and it seems to provide, you know, insight. Even Carl Sagan was interested in the Sumerian culture and the stories of how their knowledge of writing and, you know, science and agriculture and construction of temples and everything came from amphibious beings who landed in the ocean and fiery eggs, you know, from out of the sky. And how, you know, it sounded almost like an extraterrestrial visitation or something. And, of course, there's talk now about many, among theoretical physicists, of how perhaps there are, you know, other dimensions that would account for how some of these objects and beings can just kind of come and go as they do without leaving any real traces.
Well, don't you find it fascinating, Brent, that these ancient cultures all have legends of ancient visitors? And though in some cases you might really have to look into it in order to pick up the fact that these visitors came from outer space or other dimensions, all of them talk about some kind of visitation. Even Christianity has it.
That's right. And this was in the Book of Enoch, which was, you know, another one of those books that was not canonized and pushed off the side. If you want to read it, you maybe have to get with the Freemasons. But in that book, which was, you know, from the Hebrew background, it describes these beings who were like children, who, you know, would take people who had died and into the next world. They were described as flying in these kind of strange objects, cylinders and disc-type things, and they would be like children, the bodies of children, but large heads and kind of gray-colored. We have these stories, you know, of these beings, the jinn of the Muslim faith. They have many characteristics very similar. This was noted years ago by Gordon Crichton, a British scholar who noted that, you know, if you could take the greys and the jinns and the fairies of Celtic folklore, and you'd have all three who have harassed and traumatized, you know, the human victims. They can materialize and dematerialize. They would abduct people, transport them over, you know, quickly over vast distances. They took a sexual interest in us. They generally stood about 3-4 foot tall, were humanoid type. And with the jinns and the fairies, there was also this talk about other dimensions or hidden planes of reality.
Now, here's the thing, though, that we all have to consider. What about the possibilities? I mean, you just mentioned grays, big heads, big eyes. Obviously, doesn't sound human, unless we've been through an incredible metamorphosis here. What are the possibilities that some of these ancient travelers might have been us, that the past civilizations have blown themselves up, as I strongly suggest, when we had high technology, and let's say it didn't happen 10,000 years ago or 100,000 years ago, but maybe millions of years ago. Is that possible, that these ancient cultures that talk about and write about legends of ancient visitors may have been writing about us?
Well, wow. I don't know. There seems to be, like, there's some kind of a relationship. They seem to know us. What that connection, whether it's what you're talking about there, I know that some researchers, like Mark Davenport, have felt that, you know, they were time travelers. That, you know, the time travel element has been mentioned from time to time.
What do you think?
Well, it's only It would only be my personal opinion right now.
By the way, what's the brand name of your phone? Because I'm going to write them a letter and tell them they need to go back into R&D.
Oh, me. Well, it's not on here.
Well, that's the first problem. You got it in China, Brent.
Uh-oh. Oh, me.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to see if this line's any better. If not, Brent, we're going to have to reschedule with you, okay? Because it is so bad that I'm getting fast blasts from my listeners who are having a very difficult time hearing you. And there's no sense to lose this great information from you. If you know, and sometimes it's just a quick line problem, and a new phone call to you will solve this thing.
Okay, well, I hope that's the case.
Yeah. You know, if not, you've got a cell phone. If you have the ability to plug it in, we might want to try that too.
Okay.
You know, so we'll try two different things. I mean, this could very well be the story of the night, bad phones, because this thing is clicking away, and in some cases, I'm in St. Louis, but it has no bearing on you. I can barely hear you.
Okay, well, maybe if I'm lucky, a time traveler will come by and help me out here.
Yeah, right. beg a neighbor to bring you a brand new phone.
Well,
if they're listening to you,
they might
go to Brent's house and bring him a new phone.
They might take a shot at me about close to 1:30 in the morning here.
Well, don't say that. We don't want anything like that to happen to you. Anyway, the work that you put in from Visitors from Hidden Realms, I mean, how long did it take you to put this together?
Well, it took me probably about 2 years to, you know, to assemble it to the way that I wanted it, you know. And, of course, I work full-time in the Tennessee Department of Corrections, so this was kind of a part-time project.
Oh, you did? All right. You must have seen the movie The Green Mile.
Yes.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I like it.
You never had anybody like John Coffey in the old...
It was filmed right up here in Nashville.
Oh, that's right. It was. It was. You never had a John Coffey in your jail system, did you?
No, not yet. Not yet.
I know. It's a remarkable movie. It really is. And let's get back for a little bit here to in a couple minutes that we have before we try to rehook this line with you. And I do hope that it works. If not, we'll just figure out a better way. Call your phone company, get a different phone, and we'll move forward and just reset this interview with you. I mean, that's the way it goes. It's the phones that are the lifeblood of the show. And if it doesn't work, there's no sense of... losing the information you're passing on to us.
Okay. See, there may be another phone in the back. See, I'm at a relative's house, so.
Aha!
Yeah.
I'm going to blame the relative. We will have 3.5 minutes to make a decision once we go to the break, so just stand by for that. Now, in your research, you came across some other kinds of beings, chupacabras, Bigfoot, and everything else. Did you believe that they were from another world?
Well, all I was just trying to establish was there a connection, and if so, what did that connection, what did that tell us? I can't say, you know, about, for example, with the Bigfoot, whether all of them, but I do know that here in Tennessee, a few years back, I investigated some sightings. There was quite a bit of activity in Flintville, Tennessee, and we had, reports of balls of light being seen whenever the creature was appearing, a little basketball-sized phosphorescent-looking light over the treetop. So I thought, well, you know, there's a connection somewhere.
Okay, well, stay with us. We're going to try to reconnect here, Brent. This is bizarre. Because I've got a half a dozen fast blasts in from people that say he sounds as clear as a bell. Very strange. We'll be back. We'll check it out. We're going to carry on for at least another half hour with Brent, see if that phone line changes a little bit. If not, we'll go to open lines next hour. So just sit back and let's find out together on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest Brent Rains. He's the author of the book Visitors from Hidden Realms, The Origin Destiny of Humanity, as told by star elders, shaman, and UFO visitors. And we're going to talk a lot about the star elders. Brent, in your history of being a researcher, what has been for you the most compelling story you've ever heard? The one that even at this point in your life, your career, you walk away, shake your head and go, I can't believe this thing.
Wow. Well, there's been a number of them, but one that right now that I find really interesting is way down in Brazil. But when I went to the conference that's sponsored by the
Edgar Casey's group, right?
Right, the Edgar Casey.
Yeah,
group.
That's our Association for Research and Enlightenment. Yeah,
they had a conference back December 2nd and 3rd of last year. UFOs, the full spectrum, and I was honored to be a speaker there. And there was a lady that I've been corresponding with for a number of months, who was an associate there of Bob Pratt. She's originally from America, but she's lived in down near Rio since 1975, and she's had some interesting experiences. She originally did work in anthropology and archaeology down there, and she got interested in the UFO elements because she had some experiences that actually was on the alternative plane. She felt that it was these experiences indicated that they were from another dimension or something. She's kind of got into the quantum physics. And her name is Cynthia Nubi-Luz. She speaks fluent Portuguese, so she was different times at Bob Pratt, who was at one time an editor of the MUFON Journal, would get down there. He made about 14 trips altogether. He started out as a reporter for the National Enquirer and took four trips that they paid, and then the rest of them he went on his own. He was so impressed that after he left newspaper there, he continued to go down to Brazil and to investigate the reports. And one of the people he met down there and interviewed was a General Alfredo Moncir Uchoa. And what's so fascinating about this man's story was, he had a military background, very, very well known, very well liked by the people of Brazil. In the late 1940s, he came to America and spent, a couple of months at West Point learning about our style of military schooling, and went back and copied a lot of what he learned for, the Brazilian educational system in the military. And he helped to found a college, and he had a background in engineering, a very, very educated man. And back in the late 1960s, his son, who was at that time, lieutenant in the Army, was with some others doing exercises around an isolated area near Brasilia, a farming area.
Sure.
And they had heard reports about UFO sightings. So he wanted to, I think at that time he was living in Rio de Janeiro, went up there, and they began to see objects themselves, and they came closer, I think, and closer, and he had other people who were engineering degrees, science, different areas of science, who were also present, and observed these objects at close range, even in one instance, I know of a being, and when Cynthia came and I met her at this conference, she also brought a young lady by the name of Denise Slater, who I've done a two-part interview in. It's in the spring part of my magazine.
Tell us a little bit about her, too.
Okay, well, she was she's the granddaughter of this general, and she lives in the United States now. She lives in that area where this conference was. And she works for Norfolk Naval Base as an interpreter. She speaks, of course, Portuguese, Spanish, and French, so she helps military soldiers learn foreign languages.
All right.
And so she has a great interest in UFOs because of her grandfather. And in addition, she had also seen UFOs herself and had shared, you know, those experiences and in the interview that I did. And, I mean, it was just, at this point, I'm trying to interview an aunt of hers who also was present during a lot of these sightings, who's a psychologist down there in Brasilia. So there's a lot of witnesses that still, you know, even though the general, her grandfather, has passed away now, her father is also was with him on a lot of those experiences and is a general himself now and remembers the experiences and can tell you, you know, so it's just unbelievable to me.
Based on your research, though, Brent, are you at a point now where you could definitively say that you believe that these are man-made, extraterrestrial, and I mean coming from other planet systems, or coming from other dimensions? Some people believe that they're evil, that you know, they come from the demon realm. If you had to pick one or all, I mean, what do you think?
Well, I believe that they're kind of like some other dimension of reality, that the way that they can come and go, and that the way that they can psychically affect and influence people. The people who describe these experiences, often there is a psychic connection. They communicate generally by telepathy instead of, you know, a nonverbal communication. When there is a contact communication that occurs, you don't hear about verbal so much, although sometimes they'll describe they're making a peculiar buzzing or humming sound or guttural sound or something, or an incomprehensible language. But in a majority of the cases, you'll hear where they look at them and it's like they know what's on their mind, and it's words just popping into their heads. And and then there's the, as for, you know, some of them are like physical craft, and you'd say, okay, this is nuts and bolts. And then some of them are objects that morph into other shapes that don't appear to be what we call constant solid. And I think I just made that up. And they can, well, this Cynthia down in Cynthia Luce down in Brazil, in her hometown where she lives near Rio, she's in a little rural community, and she's going around this winding road, and she comes around a corner near a creek, and there's a river, and there's a large cylinder-type object. It looks perfectly solid, but it's sliding into a hillside, a solid hillside. And that was one experience that pretty much hooked her on the interdimensional.
So when you say sliding into a hillside, it like disappears, almost like
it's going right into the hillside, like it's not there. And it's, you know, it's solid rock, you know, and dirt and stuff. And it's just, in the daytime, she's looking at this.
Sometimes I've thought that they might be holograms of some type.
Or, you know, you could have the hologram. Yeah, I mean, why not holograms? You've got beings who can appear in homes. They just sort of materialize and they just dematerialize. People who describe being transported up to craft and going through the walls, you know. And I know one guy, Sandy Nichols here in Tennessee, described how a lot of times he's been abducted and they're taking him through the wall. And he said even though he's done it various times before, he keeps kind of ducking, you know, or thinking that he's, you know, he's about to hit, and then he just goes through.
Well, now let me ask you, Brent, do you think if he's being abducted, and we'll talk about that in a second, but if he's being abducted, do you think they are grabbing the astral body and they're floating that? Or do you really believe that they are taking the physical body, somehow dematerializing it, bringing it through structure, like the roof of a house or the wall?
Well, whatever the out-of-the-body experience is, there are researchers like John Keel and Ray Fowler and Ann Druffel, who've been around a long time, who do recognize that the out-of-body experience is a component of many of these abduction reports. And Keel, even years ago in one of his books, speculated that maybe some of the UFOs we see might be astral travelers. And I know that I did a survey one time of 46 UFO contactee types a few years back, and 63% of them claimed that they'd had out-of-the-body experiences.
As opposed to a physical experience.
Well, no, this is just during their lifetime.
Ah, oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Although some of them did connect them with their experiences. But anyway, I just thought that it was kind of interesting that that was a pretty high number.
You know, you highlight in the book, of course, stories told by star elders and shamans. Let's key in on that in terms of this ancient mythology, ancient legend, ancient stories of visitation. The star elders, the shamans, are carrying stories, I assume, that have been given to them by other shamans from their heritage, right?
Right. There's stories.
It's handed down.
Every culture has handed down stories of how they have interacted with beings from the upper world, from the stars, and many tell of how they will return. Many different cultures identify different areas. There's a lot of them that identify the Pleiades. Native American cultures, Central American, South American, North American, Africa, and different places around the world.
How could they make it up, Brent? If none of this was true, how could they make it up?
Well, what's really, when you're looking for patterns, it really stands out, some of those things. The Pleiadian thing, there's been work that shows that they identify certain holidays, certain religious sacred periods.
Who does?
In Peru and India and Africa, where they recognize a Pleiades connection.
Okay.
They recommend the days that we consider the three-day feast of the dead. October 31st, November 1st, and November 2nd. Generally recognize, with the Celtics, that they also are the Druids, that they also, this is a global type realization when you get in with other cultures. And also, they all talk about the body being composed of energy centers. Have a friend who's a psychotherapist who's lived in Peru, and she's met the Quero tribe down in Peru, and they talk about the chumpis, these energy belts. There's one around the heart, one by the throat, and one around the eyes and the solar plexus, and so on.
Which we would call what, your chakras?
Which we would call, from the Hindu tradition of the chakras. And what's interesting, the Hopi Indians, who have a lot of UFO.
Oh, incredible!
Yes, and they recognize the same upper five energy centers that the Buddhists do in India, over in Tibet. I mean, how did that happen?
Well, were the original shamans? I mean, how did they get the stories? I mean, were they witnesses to these visitations?
Well, not only, has it still gone on in recent years? I mean, the Australian, there was a professor, A.P. Elkins, in Sydney, Australia, who back, I think, in the 30s and 40s, investigated about 80 different clans and tribes in Australia. And they were all talking about the traditions that go back some 50,000 years of these interactions with beings from the upper world, and they would come down, and they would they would take this person into the upper world, and when they brought him back, these beings, they would have these psychic powers, and they could do wonderful things. They could do healings and such. Of course, there was also a dark side. They could also use their powers for bad if they were so inclined. But they called them men of renown. And he also heard stories of where it even happened in modern day and times. And I was talking with Cynthia about a case down involving some prominent anthropologists who finally in their retirement years, one of them came forward and said that they had known of a group in the Amazon who claimed that craft come down and these beings would exchange things with them. And apparently one of them was a witness to it, and she's trying to actually get more information.
Oh, that would be incredible. Why do you think these visitations occur with these tribes, these cultures? They seem to shy away from high-tech societies and concentrate on, again, those cultures that aren't as technologically advanced. Maybe they're more spiritually advanced than we are. Maybe that's why. I don't know. What do you think?
They have... There's a lot to be said, for spiritual spiritual advancement, too. These other cultures maybe have a culture-wise, although we've advanced, we feel advanced considerably on the technological level and such and scientific level. We're still kind of the new kids on the block. There's some cultures that have remained intact, with their traditions and their ways going back thousands and thousands of years. Of course, most of them have been disrupted by us now. But, in Australia, like I say, theirs go back 50,000 years.
Do they talk about what the visitors pass on or what kind of knowledge they want them to have?
Well, they want them to, protect the land and to live in harmony and to be caretakers and actually the original shamans, I think they were the community leaders and healers, and they served a variety of functions.
Are the visitors trying to teach them something?
Well, that's what it sounds like,
Yeah, I would think so too. Well, Brent, stay with us. We're going to be right back at the top of the hour. Your book, Visitors from Hidden Realms. Where do you get it, Brent?
Well, you can go to our website www.mysterious-america.net, alternate perceptions, and you'll see it there.
Okay, we'll talk more.